John Bachman, who pierces people's face. The K is for the kill, L is for the lover, and the M is for the mutiny, and I wish it didn't happen.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my drum?
Now the N is for knots, oh no, my bones are sinking. The B is for the peg leg that keeps me standing up. A Q is for quantum leap, R is for the rum, and the S is for the scurvy, which I wish I didn't get.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg.
That's underneath my boat. And B is for Mukitas, who plays a sour note. W is Tiasis, X marks a spot. Why? Cause I'm a pirate.
Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, arg, arg, arg. Pirate radio, pirate radio, pirate radio, where's my grog?
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com.
Welcome to Palestine Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center, www.imemc.org, for Monday, September 13, 2010. Israel allows car parks into the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, the military kills three Palestinians on Sunday evening. These stories and more are coming up. Stay tuned. For the first time since the Israeli military tightened the siege on Gaza in June of 2007, Israel allowed the entry of auto parts to the coastal region. Engineer Raed Fattouh, head of the Palestinian Committee in charge of the entry of goods into Gaza, stated that Israel decided to open the Kerem Abu Salim border crossing in order to allow the entry of nearly 170 trucks loaded with goods and supplies. On Sunday, Israel allowed the entry of 15,560 kilograms of cooking gas and 339.28 liters of industrial fuel into the Gaza Strip. Later on Sunday evening, Israeli forces stationed on the Gaza-Israel border fired tank shells across the border into the Gaza Strip, killing three shepherds. According to Palestinian medical sources, the three were identified as 19-year-old Ibrahim Abu Said, 21-year-old Ismail Abu Oda, and his grandfather. Israeli sources claimed the three were fighters and they were preparing to fire homemade shells into Israel. However, none of the Palestinian resistance groups confirmed this claim. The killings come after a series of Israeli bombings on Friday, the Muslim holiday of Eid al-Fitr, which destroyed three municipal buildings in Gaza. These bombings sparked the Palestinian resistance in Gaza to fire 11 homemade shells over the course of the weekend, all of which landed in open areas in Israel, causing no injuries or damage. In the West Bank, the Israeli authorities released legislator Mohammed Jamal al-Netsha, 52, and Netsha is Hamas-affiliated member of parliament. According to Palestinian media sources, al-Netsha was kidnapped on July 16, in 2002. Upon his release, al-Netsha was welcomed by his family. Hundreds of residents, in addition to members of the Change and Reform, the Hamas-affiliated parliamentarian bloc. Since elected in January 2006, dozens of Palestinian members of parliament sit in Israeli jails for their affiliation with Hamas, which caused the Legislative Council to become paralyzed. The that concludes our news for today. Thank you for joining us from Occupied Bethlehem. For constant updates, please visit our website at www.imenc.org. This report has been brought to you by Hassan Qassis and George Ishmael.
Afghanistan, reported 12th of September. Two more protesters were shot and killed by police in the Barak-e-Barak province of Logar province as demonstrations continued against the Dove World Outreach Center's now canceled Quran burning plans. New York City, September 11th. A Quran was burned at Ground Zero during a right-wing protest. Many prominent members of the English Defense League, a UK-based fascist group, were found and photographed in the crowd. They are an offshoot of the UK-based National Front, a known neo-Nazi group differing in that they hate Muslims instead of both Muslims and Jews. Afghanistan and Pakistan, 10th of September. U.S. and NATO forces fired shells over the Pakistani border from Afghanistan, striking houses in Sadaki village in Pakistan's North Waziristan. Quote, three people were killed and five others were wounded by mortar shells fired by coalition forces from the Afghanistan side during a gunfight with the Taliban, according to a local security official. Don't believe all that crap about U.S. combat operations being over in Iraq either. Diyala Province, Iraq, today. U.S. helicopters opened fire at dawn on the rural area of Al-Hadid, west of Aqaba. Since Saturday, Al-Hadid has been the scene of battles between resistance fighters and Iraqi security forces. The U.S. military has yet to confirm this incident. It was reported by a source in Diyala's operations command, presumably part of the Iraqi government military. Mr. Barack Obama, now is the time to throw in the towel and get out of all these wars. Bring all the troops home today.
And no amount of money you could give me, honey, couldn't pay me, ain't going back again. I ain't going back again. I ain't going back again. You won't see me back there again. No, you won't see me back there again.
On the 10th of September, the anti-war vigil at Walter Reed Army Hospital received some low-grade harassment from what appeared to be MPs. The cars coming down George Avenue, some honking for the teabaggers, some honking for the anti-war protest. What went on with the cops that came by?
It's not that much. There's a Colonel McHugh, that's his name, Colonel McHugh, inside the garrison there, is offended when we have our signs up against that black iron fence.
Or if we put candles on top of the Walter Reed Army.
So therefore we've got this big yellow line.
So you gotta understand, we can invade countries and occupy them. We can, innocent victims are the consequences of the war. Our own soldiers are the consequences of the war. But we don't want to hurt the iron fences with our cardboard.
I was thinking it might get pretty nasty with all this garbage about burning the Quran.
Well, not here, of course.
These teabaggers are going ballistic everywhere.
Yeah. Well, as far as we can tell, so far except for the screaming and hollering, The freepers up the street are otherwise behaving themselves.
That was quite a contrast from a year ago, when a Friday Walter Reed vigil fell on September 11th. Hundreds of teabaggers showed up and some tried to invade the anti-war vigil. But this year they stayed in their own space, just made a lot of noise in a hospital area. Honking cars to the freepers on Georgia Avenue. Some honking for us too. Here they are, all those Free Republic people, teabaggers, that have been making so much noise in a hospital zone. Suppose Army recruiting ads had to have side effect warnings like drug advertisements on TV do.
The United States Army may not be right for every patient. Side effects can include distress, disillusionment, bitter resentment, isolation, traumatic and post-traumatic stress, sociopathic behavior, uncontrollable sobbing, uncontrollable violence, prosecutions for war crimes, prosecutions for domestic crimes, loss of contact with loved ones, loss of ability to love, brain injuries, blindness, depleted uranium poisoning, flashbacks, horror of death, horror of being away from death, loss of the use of limbs, loss of limbs, death, suicide, excruciating pain, the desire to feel excruciating pain, overwhelming rage and misery, loss of hearing, punishment by the Army for failure to obey illegal orders, punishment by courts of law or by enemy forces for obeying illegal orders, torture, humiliation, shame, dangerous habits of blind subservience, or the wasting of what could have been the best years of your life. If you experience any of these symptoms, deal with it, sucker. You already signed your name on the dotted line.
For the past 64 years, the School of the Americas in Fort Benning, Georgia has been graduating assassins, dictators, and death squad leaders to do the dirty work of the elite in Latin America. The taxpayer-funded SOA has left a trail of violence and suffering in every country where its graduates have returned. Hundreds of thousands of Latin Americans have been tortured, raped, assassinated, disappeared, displaced, and massacred by those trained at the SOA. Enough is enough. Every year, thousands gather in Georgia to protest U.S. military involvement in Latin America. Join us at the gates of the SOA this November to honor the victims, celebrate the resistance, and pressure our government to shut down the school once and for all. From November 18th to 21st, we will have live concerts, speakers from around the world, street theater, workshops, and more. For more information on how you can stand with us to end the injustice, visit SOAW.org or call 202-234-3440.
This is WSQT Direct Action Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington. We are news from the front line. We can be reached at WSQTRadio@hushmail.com, WSQTRadio@hushmail.com. On Labor Day, a showdown at an early voting place left one person punched by a Fannie supporter and nearly erupted into general fighting after Fannie supporters had the nerve to show up in Northeast. At the Turkey Thicket Recreation Center in Northeast, Mayor Fannie had the nerve to show up with supporters for speeches. This amounts to having a campaign rally at a voting place, an illegal practice in many places. I don't know if this is true in D.C. Here's what WTOP Radio reported as it happened. Quote, Mayor Adrian Fennie was speaking to supporters when a few very vocal supporters of challenger Vince Gray tried to interrupt. One woman confronted Fennie after being laid off from her D.C. government job. Another Gray supporter complained about another early voting rally Saturday when police had to be called after Fannie supporters threatened Gray. In other words, voters in Northeast who were directly harmed by Fenty's policies confronted him in person and were outraged at this intrusion into their place of voting. Again, according to WTOP, it was a Fenty supporter that took things to the level of actual violence. Quote, a fight nearly broke out after one of Fenty's critics, Robert Branham, claimed he was hit by a Fenty supporter. In other words, not only did Fenty supporters show up at a place where they were most unwelcome, they resorted to violence and nearly incited a riot. Seems to me, Mayor Fenty is good at inciting trouble in this town. Just when you thought it was bad enough that DC mayoral candidate Vincent Gray had to summon police to keep Mayor Fenty's men from beating up his supporters at polling places, a new scandal has erupted. TV7 News is now reporting that someone complained to them about not receiving a job promised to them by Mayor Fenty's campaign office for $100 a day after he rode to an early polling place and voted for Fenty, as an alleged Fenty campaign staffer had asked. At least two separate people have now reported being offered jobs in return for their votes by the Fenty campaign. In other words, good old-fashioned vote buying. Interestingly, Fenty is too cheap to deliver even on these promises. The jobs were not there when people showed up to collect. Fenty's opponent, Vincent Gray, who is leading nearly all polls by double-digit margins, is calling for an FBI investigation of vote buying by Fenty's campaign.
Despite the denials of the spokesperson for the mayor's campaign, there is evidence that this man went down and registered that day and voted that day. I'm a black dog,
man! Fenty always was a backdoor man when it came to awarding city contracts. Now it seems he also prefers to win elections by the back door as well. Are DC ballot boxes going to be pre-stuffed with Fenty votes? Seems to me it's the only way he and School Chancellor Ree can ever stay in office.
The Great Recession has struck a severe blow to the tough-on-crime agenda of imposing longer sentences on criminals and building more prisons. Even in conservative states like Texas, Alabama, and Georgia, fiscal reality has set in as state governments have adopted cheaper and more humane alternatives to harsh prison sentences. The Texas prison population increased tenfold from 1972 to 2008, and in 2007, the state decided to end a major prison expansion project in favor of a less expensive plan to increase investment in drug and alcohol treatment services. For the first time in decades, the prison population in the Lone Star State has started to decline. Kansas has followed suit by increasing drug treatment programs for parolees as part of an effort to prevent ex-offenders from committing new drug-related crimes. According to The Nation magazine, 10 states have now embraced a justice reinvestment strategy, which combines reductions in prison spending while diverting funds to community-based anti-crime initiatives.
Welcome to War of the Trees on WSQT Radio, broadcasting on 88.1 FM from the heart of occupied Washington.
There is unrest in the forest, there is trouble with the trees, for the maples want more sunlight and the oaks ignore their pleas.
In a world of corporate domination and utter ruin, whosoever shall have the courage to take direct action against those who are ruining our planet and our very lives. On the 12th of September, two members of Rising Tide DC showed up at Adams Morgan Day dressed as Pep Coal smokestacks protesting Pepco's continued burning of mountaintop removal coal and continued rate hikes to line the pockets of corporate executives who make their living off the backs of both the mountain communities in Appalachia and of people in D.C. paying sky-high rates and threatened with Pepco proposals for guaranteed profits. So what are our demands from Pepco today?
We want Pepco to give us renewable energy. We don't want them making billions of dollars off of our backs and off of the backs of the communities in Appalachia where they're blowing up the mountains in order to give us electricity from coal. We want renewable energy and no more rate hikes.
Speaking of rate hikes, a community activist pointed out that Pepco is asking for guaranteed profits in the face of possible future declines in demand due to greater energy efficiency.
What I'm saying is that people need to be prepared to fight Pepco, because as we are becoming energy efficient, and I say we, I mean low-income
people.
Which means demand goes down and their profit goes down. So what they are demanding legislation is that they have a guaranteed profit. That's wrong. And D.C. landlords do it now, and we're fighting that. So we want to be careful to make sure that when Pepco is looking at the Office of the People Council or the other kind of commission, that they don't put their people on there so that they can get a guaranteed profit.
Yeah, they've already tried legislation once that did not pass. But lots of smoke in here from the barbecue. It goes well with the coal burning smokestacks. Not exactly what you expect to see in a green pavilion now.
Exactly, but this is the reality. This is the reality of what Pepco is all about.
And don't
Pepco, they're Pepco.
Is your SUV running low on gas? Is your wallet been running on fumes lately? Well, this is Behind Pollution, offering blowout prices on regular, plus, and premium at every BP Behind Pollution gas station, where you can get a gusher of savings filling up that Ford Excursion or that Hummer. And never mind our blown-out oil well at Macondo in the Gulf of Mexico. Never mind all those oiled pelicans. And never mind this burning hot summer of global warming. Never mind the voices that tell you to boycott BP for the horrific things Behind Pollution has done in the Gulf of Mexico. Just keep filling up that SUV. Just keep enjoying that gusher of savings the blowout prices at BP gas stations are bringing you. After all, you never liked seafood much anyway.
Well, DNA is natural, it's the building block of life. And when the good Lord put it together, you know, I think he did it upright. He made lots of different organisms, a complex web of life. Each one dependent on another, and so the circle, it closed up tight. But then along came a man and a microscope, and he separated the genes. And when he put them all back together, he made lots of strange, unnatural things. And now food crops grow on the ocean floor, cows that grow on trees. Now the ranchers gaze while their oysters graze on grass that depends on a hormone spray in our genetically modified world.
A massive recall of eggs linked to salmonella contamination began on August 13th after the Centers for Disease Control announced the eggs were connected to more than 1,300 reported cases of salmonella poisoning. Overall, a half billion eggs were recalled nationwide. The Food and Drug Administration has opened a criminal investigation with the Justice Department as the federal agency looks into the cause of the outbreak. FDA inspectors who visited Wright County Egg Company in Iowa, one of the egg farms at the center of the salmonella outbreak, reported finding rodents, flies, maggots, and chicken manure piled as high as 8 feet tall. Chickens can contract salmonella bacteria from rodent droppings, which pass to the bird's ovaries and then inside the egg. Ironically, new, stricter FDA regulations on preventing salmonella contamination at large egg farms had gone into effect in July. Between the lines, Scott Harris spoke with Patty Lovera, assistant director of the group Food and Water Watch. She discusses the egg recall in the context of large-scale factory farming and the danger to consumers without adequate food safety inspections and enforcement.
Eggs have salmonella in them because the chickens had salmonella in their system. And then the question is, well, how did the chickens, you know, get exposed to salmonella and have it in their systems? And so there are several different ways it can happen. So there's a lot of focus for large operations raising birds to keep out mice and rats because rodents could bring in salmonella, and if their feces is in there, you could get salmonella that way. They're worried about wild birds, but they're also worried about what the chickens are eating. And so the investigation, I believe, is also going on at the company that both these firms that recalled eggs were buying feed, evidently, from the same company. So they're worried about the feed coming out of that operation as well. So there's different angles they have to run down. But, you know, the focus of preventing salmonella, a lot of it is on sanitation. It's keeping these facilities kind of contained and trying to keep out these sources of salmonella. But we also want to hear more, and I hope that we do hear more, about how big these operations were and what kind of conditions, you know, the chickens are being raised in, what kind of stress they're under, and what role that plays. Because there's a lot of controversy about putting so many animals in one facility and if that makes them more susceptible to diseases like salmonella.
You often hear that the Food and Drug Administration and other agencies of the government don't have enough inspectors to really ensure in a very foolproof way the safety of our food here in this country. What's the system in place for egg production? I read that there recently was some new regulations put in place at the federal level to do more intense inspection of eggs. I think that was back in July.
Right, and that's one. I mean, there's always an issue of resources, and the FDA is in charge of eggs that are in the shell, like that are involved in this recall. They're in charge of produce, you know, vegetables and fruit. They're in charge of fish and processed food. So they have a lot of the food supply, and they don't have a lot of inspectors to go out, and they don't get to plants very often, and that's been a historic problem we've had to deal with. When it comes to eggs, they also didn't have rules for a long time. It took over a decade, actually, for the FDA to put out rules on what big companies should do to prevent salmonella in eggs. They just went into effect in July, so we haven't really even seen them, you know, use them and get them up and running and go out and inspect and see if they're being followed before we had this dramatic example of, you know, what can go wrong.
Patty, I read that your group, Food and Water Watch, has stated that currently most eggs produced in the United States are from just five states, and some of these very giant egg production houses, factory farms, and that your group would be in favor of decentralizing, that it should be not just five states or a handful of these big chicken egg factories, but in fact smaller farms that presumably could have a higher quality control. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, and this is across our food system at this point, but eggs are actually a very good example of how really concentrated everything has gotten. You know, it's not like the picture on the package anymore where we've got these very small farms with just a handful of chickens and maybe a couple cows. I mean, we've really specialized and concentrated this food production. So we have five states that produce half the eggs in the country. 12 companies. There are 12 companies that produce eggs that have more than 5 million chickens laying eggs for them. So most eggs that people buy are coming from, you know, what we would call a factory farm, a very large operation that's got, you know, 75,000, 100,000 chickens. So this is not the picture on the package, and it's a different type of production, and we think that, you know, the regulations have not kept up with the risks that come with this type of facility. So there's lots of folks that are interested in raising chickens a different way. You know, we need to help them figure out where and how to do that and reconnect, you know, consumers and smaller producers and have the processing and the links you need to restore kind of local production like that. If for no other reason, then they're smaller operations, and if something does go wrong, you're not going to have half a billion eggs involved. It's going to be smaller numbers. We think there's also a lot of differences in the type of eggs you get out of that system.
How would you gauge the influence of the big agriculture companies on our regulatory system here to keep our food safe? Obviously, these guys got a lot of money and they want to maximize their profit, but are they pretty successful at diluting regulations?
Sadly, across the board, yeah, they are. And that goes from, you know, what are the standards for, you know, environmental permits for facilities like this to what are the labels that are on our food. I mean, we're always kind of running up against big agricultural interests whenever you're talking about something like this. And eggs, you know, it took 10 years for there to be an FDA standard on salmonella in eggs because the industry didn't want to be regulated. They kept saying, let us do a voluntary program. Let us do this instead. We don't need a regulation. Why don't we just get some guidance? You know, I mean, there's all these suggestions they have instead because they really don't want to be regulated. And that goes across the board.
That was Patty Lovera, Assistant Director of the group Food and Water Watch. Contact the group at area code 202-683-2500 or visit their website at foodandwaterwatch.org.
On the 4th of September, protesters showed up here at 1630 B19th Street, back at the alley where Michael Pace, head of government relations for Goldman Sachs, lives. Goldman Sachs, through its investments in Fortress, has been propping up Huntington Life Sciences, a contract animal tester.
Shareholder in Fortress, the life support system of Huntington Life Sciences. Huntington Life Sciences is a contract animal testing facility that murders 500 animals each and every day of the week. They've been exposed in 7 separate undercover investigations for punching 4-month-old beagle puppies in the face, dissecting live primates, and mutilating rabbits to the highest bidder. And Michael Pace, you are directly responsible for this. Because, see, you know exactly what you need to do, Michael. You need to end your and sell all your shares with Fortress, the life support system of Huntington Life Sciences. We're not going away. Just 500 animals died today!
Michael Pace is to blame!
500 animals suffered in pain!
Michael Pace is to blame!
Michael Pace for the cat and for the mouse!
We are here outside your house!
Michael Pace for the beagle, for the mouse!
We are here outside your house!
For the rabbit, for the mouse!
We are here outside your house!
For the your money!
Your fault!
Your greed!
Your fault!
Your job!
Your fault!
Your company!
Your fault!
Your 20 minutes!
No cops!
Been 20 minutes!
No cops!
Michael Pace, it's been 20 minutes!
No cops!
Oh, yeah, it's been 20
minutes! After about half an hour of protesters having a total free hand, two cops arrived, only to tell agitated neighbors that protesters had every legal right to be there.
We've got some neighbors supporting us, another neighbor agitated, trying to get the cops to do something about the protest when the law and the First Amendment say that the police can only stand and watch.
He's actually in the corner there.
Polluting the land, polluting the water.
Dropping it off the animal slaughter.
Oh, look at
polluting the water.
Time of the protest. Word came out that Goldman Sachs had just dumped 2/3 of their shares in Fortress, 1/3 left to go. Other investors follow suit. Fortress will go bankrupt. And after them, Huntington Life Sciences as well.
That's right. The shutdown of Huntington Life Sciences. Now Huntington Life Sciences is over $100 million in debt because of your ties with Fortress. And
that's where the money came from.
For the reason Huntington Life Sciences is still in existence today. So Michael Pace, you need to go in on Monday. Go tell Roy Blankfein they need to sell all their shares with Huntington Life Sciences. We're not going away. We're not backing down. This is our first time here, and it definitely will not be our last unless you sell all ties with Huntington Life Sciences and sell all your
because in D.C. there's no sleep for the wicked.
They can't stop us, let them try.
Huntington Life Sciences is a contract animal testing laboratory where investigators have caught so-called researchers punching beagle puppies in the face and cutting up live monkeys without anesthetic. They would have gone bankrupt a year ago if another company called Fortress hadn't made $100 million in loans to them. On the 7th of September, the siege of Fortress continued with Goldman Sachs and Nomura, two major stockholders in Fortress, receiving visits at the office from protesters. Goldman Sachs is buckling. They've dumped two-thirds of their stock in Fortress, but they still hold one-third more, and the protests don't stop until they dump everything. In addition, Bayer and Sanofi of Venice, two notorious customers of puppy-killing Huntington Life Sciences, also received protests at their offices.
We started off actually at Goldman Sachs, also demanding that they drop all the remaining one-third of their shares.
And they've dumped two-thirds already.
It was funny because when we arrived, security came out with these velvet ropes and put them out in front of the building, and they had like five security guards out there, really came out to make sure that we don't get into the office area. We only stayed there for about 20-25 minutes and then moved on to Numara, where activists did enter the lobby and with a air horn.
Good afternoon, Numara! We're back because you own 30% of Fortress Investments, the lifeline of Huntington Life Sciences. Huntington Life Sciences is a contract animal testing facility who's been exposed in seven separate undercover investigations, punching beagle puppies in the face, dissecting live primates, and mutilating rabbits to the highest bidder. Numara, you have the largest amount of ownership of Fortress Investments, and your board of directors is the same board of directors as Fortress Investments. You have the ability to cut the lifeline to Huntington Life Sciences and end the madness within their walls once and for all. 500 animals died today!
No more is to blame!
500 animals suffered in pain!
No more is to blame!
500 animals died today!
No more is to blame!
That was at Numara.
At Numara.
And then we showed up at the AstraZeneca and Bayer office, and actually were able to penetrate the doors. We hung back until an employee was going in, and then we went in after them.
Nice.
And we were able to give a speak out and sound the air horn as well.
Nice.
At the lobby, which
that was heard throughout the building.
These protests work. It takes time, but eventually the big pharmaceutical companies always get it up to dump Huntington Life Sciences like Pfizer, the maker of Viagra, did. And financial companies tend to divest much more quickly. Only a couple months into the campaign, Goldman Sachs has already dumped two-thirds of their shares in Fortress and will no doubt soon find themselves dumping the rest. As Fortress finds themselves facing the investors' equivalent of a run on the bank, they will have no choice but to dump Huntington Life Sciences themselves, and when that happens, puppy killing, monkey torturing Huntington Life Sciences will close their doors forever.
Hold your head up high, raise your